This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
And so when I speak of the goddess, I speak of Mother Nature. And when I speak of being a witch, I speak of being a priestess of Mother Nature and a woman who is intoxicated with the natural world. And when I speak of magic, I speak of the ability to cause change to occur by willpower and what I call coincidence control. Magic is essentially setting yourself into the motion of the wave of chaos to come out, hopefully and more probably, where you want to come. Because magic is the control of forces that are not yet fully understood by science, but they're there. So magic is kind of a way to swim through chaos.
And from the magical chaos that is our recording studio in Sebastopol, California, this is Stories About Journeys, and this is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller. Now, even here, even in Sonoma County, not everyone talks like this. This is an area where goddess religions and New Age spirituality form a significant subculture, and you're quite likely to see a pentacle or a Celtic knotwork tattoo on your postal clerk.
No, we do not have maenads running rampant down Main Street, but people are pretty tolerant here, I think, for the most part.
We did have our door to hell controversy. That can wait for another show.
Yes. But, you know, growing up in the Midwest, where I first became aware that there were other types of people in the world, I never thought of them as coping with all the daily things that we normal people did. They didn't take out the garbage. They didn't deal with clogged drains. They just kind of blazed forth wildly and then died. But it doesn't quite work that way, right? The jobs of life are life.
So this isn't a feature about alternative lifestyles. It's about, well, I know it firsthand myself. A long journey toward truth.
Morning Glory Zell speaking to this wonderful microphone.
In any subculture, whether it's rock and roll or religious charismatics, stamp collectors or environmentalists or teenagers, there are some figures around whom stories accumulate like pigeons feeding. That's what it means, I guess, to be legendary. In the subculture of the American neo-pagan revival, Morning Glory Zell Ravenheart is one of these.
And I've always been kind of an odd child, and kids called me a witch because of my psychic stuff as a little kid.
Now, if you know of neo-pagans only from those perennial lifestyle features around Halloween that tell us, yes, there are real witches, and they're just ordinary people, or at least no weirder than your next-door neighbors.
There are millions of us. And some of us are perfectly normal-looking people who do perfectly normal-looking things. But I'm not one of those people. I'm out there on the fringe. I've always been a fringy.
But this isn't about a representative of something. This is about one woman's journey.
And it's kind of funny because my earliest time, we were stable. We had a house and a property that we owned, and then my father got emphysema from smoking cigarettes, and all of that went away, just poof, in about 3 years. And we moved out of living in a nice house and nice environment into living with my mom and my dad and I in an 18-foot travel trailer. And the thing that made it wonderful, however, the transformational thing, is that we traveled all over the United States from the time I was about 8 years old to the time I was about 13. And we had amazing adventures because the upside of my dad was that he was interested in life. Anytime there would be some kind of an Indian ruin or a village, you know, some kind of cultural experience, my father was just game for it. He wasn't one of these kind of guys that, no, we have to push on and get, you know, drive through to the next town. He would say, oh, let's go see Meteor Crater. And then we would spend a lot of time just like walking around and talking about these things. I got to see, you know, Navajos living in their hogans and all their sheep and the Pueblos and the Mesas in Arizona, New Mexico. And I went to Louisiana for Mardi Gras and got to see alligators and got a big scar that I still have on my knee from trying to catch baby alligators on the side of the bayou. And I almost got eaten by a mother alligator because she was after me. I had one of her babies. I had to let it go. When my dad's health broke, my mother and I spent a lot of time in the hospital. My mom became his nurse because we didn't have enough money to hire a full-time, sit-there-all-the-time kind of nurse. And so I lived out in the lobby of the hospital. I'd bring my little pillow and my toys and my sleeping bag, and there I would be. And my books, piles and piles of books. And so people from the laboratory and the x-ray and stuff like that, and the nurses would come out and talk to me and help entertain me. And a couple of times they took me into the lab, you know, and I got to see what blood looked like under a microscope. And I got to go into x-ray, and they showed me pictures of the x-rays. And that absolutely delighted me. You got pictures of skeletons all over the place. I was like, wow, where do these people keep all their skeletons? And he said, well, everybody's got a skeleton inside them. And I said, I've got a skeleton inside me? My very own skeleton? And that was one of the great revelations of my life, that this scary, spooky, creepy Halloween thing was my own friend that lived inside of me. And the idea of having a pet skeleton. I guess the journey that was hardest for me was when we would have to leave a place that I had grown fond of. And when I had finally learned to make friends with the kids, I didn't know what it took in order to get people to like me. And so I resorted to all kinds of becoming a performer. I was the gypsy that told the tales that kept the kids interested and amazed them and got them to say, no, that couldn't be. And when I would finally get to the point where I got past that performing phase, and some of the girls or some of the boys would get to be my friends, I would be told, okay, we're leaving. We're pulling out of here next week. And I would cry and say, Daddy, Daddy, do we have to go? And it would always be, yep, gotta go. You know, I was like a really good kid. My one real serious vice was that I was a liar. I was an absolute, inveterate, dyed-in-the-wool, compulsive liar. And part of that was because I lied to get out of trouble. But the other part of it was that I lied to tell wild, fanciful stories. The emotional payoff for telling tall tales was still a thing that I was very much into all the way up through high school and into my young adulthood.
We have to skip over a few things for the sake of time. So we jump over her leaving home, getting married, raising a daughter, hitchhiking from Oregon to Minneapolis to a witch's convention, meeting the love of her life, commuting between two husbands, becoming priestess of a pagan church based on a science fiction novel, raising unicorn goats and traveling cross-country to Renaissance fairs, her polyamorous relationships, in fact, coining the word itself, skipping that run-of-the-mill stuff. But let's catch up with this question of truth.
And it really created serious problems for me. And I kind of cruised along oblivious and just kind of bulldozing my way through life, you know, and not really caring about the impact. And when I got to be about 35, it all came to a head. I had been experimenting with various kinds of psychedelic things. And I punched through to the part of my brain where all my lies were. Because the problem with my lying is I believed it. This behavior was just poisoning me at my root. And I had a mask on that I believed was my face. And it wasn't until I was 35 and that mirror cracked in two. And it was like I saw both halves of me for the first time. And it broke my heart, and I wanted to die because I was a very self-righteous person. You know, boy, I was harsh with other people's foibles. Because after all, boy, I'd been through a lot. I was a survivor of terrible abuse and blah, 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 blah. Well, all that is true, but that isn't a license to think that you're better than everybody. Part of the trigger for all this was we were contemplating this trip to New Guinea to go in search of the mermaids. We were done raising unicorns, and the unicorns were with a circus, and we took the money that we got from that and decided we were going to go off to New Guinea to look for the pishmary that people had talked about. And we thought we were going to rediscover a brand new species, you know, amassing the various equipment that we wanted to get together to go on this expedition and, you know, hiring a dive boat and a camera crew and the whole thing. We're going to turn it into a documentary, which never happened, but that's another story, another journey for another day. And in the middle, it's like life is what happens when you're making other plans. And I realized that I had been telling everyone that since I had had my first degree initiation, you know, all these years ago, and I said, well, I'm ready for my second degree now, and it has to be a life or death ordeal. So I was like telling this to all the people that what I was going to do is, in order for this life or death ordeal, I was going to go on the dive boat out into the open ocean and cut myself and swim around the boat 3 times. And if I didn't get eaten by a shark, that would be my thing. Well, suddenly what happened was that the goddess, you know, just basically appeared after I had this revelation, and she had her shark fins on, and she said, how do you think that I would deal with a liar who dangles herself like bait? Do you think I would not take that bait? Because you're a tasty morsel. Do you really think that magic isn't real? We love you, but you're a bad kitty. I realized I had to come up with a new plan. Well, how about if your second degree initiation is a different kind of an ordeal? How about if the life or deathness of this ordeal is that you have to go around to all the people you've ever lied to and tell them the truth? And I did this. It wasn't simple. It was the hardest thing I ever did in my life. And the very next day, the very first person I had to tell was Oberon. I had to tell my soulmate, who thought that that there was no secrets between us, that we were a perfect union. And the hardest thing in my world was to have to tell that man that I'd lied to him from the get-go. And I did it just like I always deal with going on stage. Oddly enough, I used an old technique. When I'm about to deal with a camera or a microphone, there's this moment of absolute paralysis where your mind goes blank and your carefully prepared speech just completely goes out the door. I just kind of reach down and I dig my fingernails into my leg a little bit or my arm, and the presence of that sensation kind of brings everything into a sharp focus. And then I take a deep breath and it all comes out in a rush. And that's what I did. And I told him, I have something to tell you. I've lied to you all these years. And so I just told him everything. And to his great, amazing, a wonderful credit, he broke down and cried. I broke down and cried. He was furious. He was hurt. He was wounded. The pain in his eyes was every bit as bad as I ever imagined it would be. But he blinked a couple of times, and we just went through it, and I realized he wasn't going to leave. And I was just deeply grateful. And we've stuck by each other. There are plenty of times when he's done things like that that have been catastrophic for me. And I've stuck by him and he's stuck by me. And after that, then I went all the way through all the different members of our community, all the people that were my nearest and dearest friends. I went around to them and told them. And I went to my mother and told her, you know, and bit by bit, I've come through it all and told the truth to everyone. Some of the lies that I've had to straighten out were really difficult because they were printed in books, you know, and I had to wait until the book went to a second printing. or I had to come out and tell the story in a different book so that people would know. So yeah, this story is actually an example of what can happen to you if you let your mouth overload your ass, as my daddy used to say. Oh, probably 100. A lot. I meet a lot of people. Every single time I did it, it was like plunging a dagger, not into me, into them. I lost people who just like said, that's it. I thought all these years something didn't add up. But by and large, people didn't. By and large, everybody's got their own skeletons that lives inside of them. Ideally, these kinds of acts that we have of penance help to unknot the vast knots that human nature is all knotted into. And I think that that is the mystery and the magic of social justice. Because when we do attempt one single person to make the world a better place by doing what is right and righting some wrong that we can affect, it sets off a chain reaction. And I do believe it absolutely was my second degree initiation. Then I could really believe in magic and see it happen and appreciate it. I've spent a lot of time meditating in mirrors and trying to see, look inside myself and say that I can see the lines in my face and see those as paths that I've taken in the journey that I'm proud of and that I'm happy with. Even when they're hard or bad, or you wish you hadn't have gone down that road. Boy, there's a lot of roads we go down that we wish we hadn't have gone. I think being able to make yourself vulnerable in a way that where you're not so wonderful, people have to see that you're not wonderful. Maybe you are. I mean, you know, I think we're all wonderful in different ways, but we have these gritty, nasty, icky skeletons inside us that we got to learn to love. And I think facing the dark and the scary things in our life is the thing that makes that skeleton into a friend and allows us the backbone to do what we need to do.
In Pengrove, California, we were talking with Morning Glory Zell Ravenheart. You can visit the Ravenheart website of Mythic Statuary at www.mythicimages.com. This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
Well, we were thinking about the question of truth and how it works in a long-term marriage or the marketplace or politics. Startling to me to hear large numbers of people in the current Iraq controversy say, the government knows stuff they're not telling us. And this as an argument in support of the policy.
They certainly know more than we do. They know things that we really do not want to know.
But thinking about this whole truth thing and what seems to be a cleansing of those old outmoded ideas of guilt and shame that hold us back from doing vile and grotesque things. And we thought, well, what is the proper place today of lies and deceit in relation to the laws of supply and demand? This is a little piece called The Right Man for the Job.
So, Mr. Leonard, thanks for coming in.
Yep.
Your resume looks good, and so I just wanted to ask you a few questions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do the final selection, but I do make recommendations, and we want to make sure we've got the right man for the job, irrespective of gender.
Could I ask?
Why you're hooked up?
Is a lie detector or something?
Well, a polygraph is very crude. It tells us if you're nervous about something. Well, so what? Most people today are less nervous about lies than they are about telling the truth. This is Demosthenes. He makes us all honest men. Don't worry, it doesn't hurt really much, okay?
Well, I guess.
So this is kind of unusual going back so far. You list Boy Scouts.
I do, because I think that's a formative experience, and it's obviously not professional qualifications, but in fact, I was an Eagle Scout, you know, one of the youngest Eagle Scouts, and I'm very proud of that. Even though I never really passed knot tying or cooking or swimming, my dad just signed the slips, and I always felt like a total fake. What?
Pretty neat, huh? I'll bet you'd actually forgotten that. You've told it so many times you believed your own BS. Don't worry. There's a little bit of nausea to start with, but it gets easier. So, you graduated from Cal State.
I'd better say right here that the honors part there is a misprint. I'm updating it, but my dad said you can say with high honors because it is a high honor to graduate. Which I didn't after they caught me for buying a term paper the prophet already seen three times and they bounced me out on my ass.
That sucker is something, isn't it? It was developed by the military. There's big bucks in there. Okay, so let's see. You were a junior manager at Kinko's, which must have been through padding your resume, yes?
Yes.
Until?
I quit. I was fired. I wasn't fired. I was terminated for having my hand in the till. Maybe I better just go.
Mr. Leonard, don't be upset. Lots of people fudge a little. We all want that extra edge, that extra piece of banana cream pie, even though we know we don't deserve it. It's normal. So let's continue. Are you married?
I was married for a time, but we were divorced.
For what reason?
Well, actually, to be perfectly frank, she thought I was seeing another woman. Which I really, really wanted to, but I could never score, so I made her believe I was having an affair so I could feel like a man.
You should have been more persistent. Lots of women really go for pathological liars. So, all this stuff, let's see. Your service record mm-hmm. and then corporate positions, mm-hmm. some political stuff, mm-hmm. advertising. Mm-hmm. You've moved around. Mm-hmm. I suppose if we went into detail, we might find more or less the same patterns, mm-hmm. Since lies do tend to perpetuate themselves. Oh, Enron. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I was just as surprised about that as everybody else because mm-hmm. we really thought we were doing something very positive for the economy and the consumers, and mm-hmm. we never remotely imagined the fact we'd get caught. I'm really trying to tell the truth.
Yes, you really are. Demosthenes didn't beep on that one. He knows you're trying. You're just not capable of it.
Because I feel like all evidence to the contrary. I admit that I've got a lot of energy and real skills. In fact, I'm very smart.
Demosthenes accepts that.
And I've got a lot to give because integrity, I mean, basic integrity means being focused on one thing, just having a total belief and a total focus on the basic values and the underlying principles and what I can really do for me.
It's remarkable, Mr. Leonard. You know, most people, and I say this, regardless of race, creed, or gender, most people at a certain point just stop trying. The fundamental falsity of their life gives way, and they realize it's a total sham, and they might as well start facing the truth. But you don't seem to learn. You just go right on.
I just want this job. I really feel I'm right for this job, and I know there's a lot of crazy stuff there, but that's just because I really think I can do a great job here and really be of service. And I got so many people I want to get even with. I get some power and ride around in big cars and people want to suck up to me at parties and I can get free food and hookers and I'm set for life. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. I'm mad as hell and I'd smash my fist in your smirky little mouth if I wasn't so scared that you'd hit me back. I'll go.
No, Mr. Leonard. No, it's pretty astonishing. Of all the most highly qualified candidates, you're the only one who's persisted to the end with lies, half-truths, prevarication, omissions, euphemisms, mumbo-jumbo. Well, you know, you get my point. You're the right man for the job. I'll convey my recommendation to the president. We'll be in touch.
Oh. You are listening to The Right Man for the Job. And since some listeners might read political implications into that piece, which it's not, it's just kind of a feel-good piece for job seekers, we might add a quote from an essay by E.B. White about that much-maligned wanderer, the liberal. The liberal holds that he is true to the Republic when he is true to himself. He greets with enthusiasm the fact of the journey as a dog greets a man's invitation to take a walk. And he acts in a dog's way, too, swinging wide, racing ahead, doubling back, covering many miles of territory that the man never traverses, all in the spirit of inquiry and the zest for truth. He leaves a crazy trail, but he ranges far beyond the genteel old party he walks with, and he is usually in a better position to discover a skunk.
So that's our trips for this week. Hitchhiking Off the Map is produced by The Independent Eye with funding from the National Endowment for the Arts and the California Arts Council and from the Hitchhikers Guild. Send us your email address for announcements, info@independenteye.org.
Next up, two stories about grandmothers.
This is Elizabeth Fuller.
And Conrad Bishop. Peace and joy.
Oh, well, I always do a deep thing. I just don't know. Sometimes you aim a thing and it goes into a completely different place. That's part of the chaos magic. When you get on a wave, you can't really predict where that wave is going to take you. You pretty much know it's going to end up on shore. What happens to you in between, all you can do is to set up things in motion. It's like doing a tarot reading. You can ask a question, and the cards may decide to answer that question, but 9 times out of 10, they'll tell you something completely different that you never expected to hear.